Hi, I'm Meredith.
And I'm Katie.
And you're listening to I'm Not Scared, You're Scared,
a horror movie podcast.
If you're a fan of the show, please like and follow us on iTunes and Spotify and review us. It'll help spread the word.
Also, you can follow us on Instagram at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared, or email us at I'm Not Scared, You're Scared at gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us. We are here to talk about Urban Legend.
Yeah, the next installment of our summer theme of ensemble cast teen horror from the late 90s, early aughts.
That's such a mouthful.
Yeah.
I would say early, late 90s, early 2000s teen slasher.
Yeah, although we've debated whether or not all of them qualify as slashers.
Oh, that's true. Okay, well, in any case,
Urban Legend... You know what you're here for. Yeah.
Urban Legend came out in 98. Mm-hmm. I saw it in the theater.
I don't remember when I saw it for the first time. Probably, I don't know. I don't know if I would have seen it in theater. Because my theater pal, Hillary, like she and I went and saw everything in the theater together in middle school, but then we went to different high schools, so we hung out a little bit less. And so I didn't really have going to the movies friends as much in high school, so I might have been less likely to actually catch it on the big screen.
Mm-hmm. I remember I was goth.
I'm sure you were.
I know, it's so surprising to everybody. I don't remember if I was in middle school or
no, high not in 98.
I was in high school, right?
Yeah, you were in high school.
I don't know. It's all right. Yeah,
98 was the end of my junior or beginning of my junior year.
Okay, so it was my freshman year then. Because I graduated in 2001.
Yeah, you were a year behind me, so it was the beginning of your sophomore year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Numbers.
We love them. We're so good with them.
But before we dive into the minutiae of this movie.
Of counting.
What's new with you, Katie?
Well, I actually have a big what's new with me. Last week, the family went to Disneyland.
Oh.
It was first time in 2 years. I may have mentioned this before, but my husband's family has always been very, very big Disney folk, like going every year his whole life. My family was the other end of the spectrum where my mom took each of us once when we were a small child, and then you've been, so why would you go back?
It's also very expensive, so it's you're like, we don't need to do that again if you're, a little bit of a penny pincher.
Yeah, which my parents were that also. I'd only been, maybe two times in my life until I met my husband. And, then we started going constantly even before we had our kids and then definitely after we had our kids. But then COVID hit. And so our last visit in 2022 was our first one in like 4 years at that point, which was a really long gap for my kids. And so it was a big game changer of them being so much older and us to be able to just be like, okay, bye. Like, you want to go where? Okay, great. Especially because they know the park so well. They're so familiar with all of it. And they were old enough and they're like total besties. They like get along super well and love spending time together. So, and also they started selling more alcohol in Disney Park. So like the last trip was amazing.
Well, not in Disneyland though.
They have the there team, right? is. No, there is a couple of restaurants. There's one restaurant in New Orleans Square that has a mint julep. There's a couple of, but of course, those are the kind of restaurants where you have to get a reservation like months and months in advance. We like Carnation Cafe on Main Street.
Yeah.
They have wine and beer and then they have a very short cocktail menu.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's totally different because I had a park pass for a handful of years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was always California Adventure only.
Yeah, and California Adventure has it a lot more places now than it originally did. And I know that, that was the first place they introduced having alcohol in the parks before it started creeping over. And it's the same thing with Starbucks. They put a Starbucks in California Adventure before they put one in Disneyland. Anyway, so that last trip was pretty amazing. But then this trip, we reintroduced a baby because it was my niece's first ever trip, and she's about 18 months old. And so it was really, we had both ends of the spectrum. My kids are, 15 and 17, And then we have a 1 year old.
And you're like, oh crap, we need to know where like the changing tables are in this park. We need to know other stuff.
Fortunately, again, like all of that stuff is stuff the family already knows because they've been, you know, they've spent so much time there over the years with kids of all ages across the board. And I would say it went pretty well. Baby was, you know, a little bit fussier than we wanted her to be sometimes. But
what a baby.
Yeah. Well, and another thing is like it was pretty hot for us Bay Area folk. Mm-hmm. And that was a little uncomfortable. And then a lot of rides were closed. Haunted Mansion is having its line refurbished. Splash Mountain is still being converted over to Tiana's Bayou Adventure.
They're like, this is racist. Why are we still doing this? Because you get to get wet and when you're really hot. That's fair.
But it was a bummer because that's probably my kid's favorite shared ride. Either that or the Guardians of the Galaxy drop ride in California Adventure, but Splash Mountain is like in their top three, and so it was a real bummer to have that closed. And Haunted Mansion is a big favorite too. Winnie the Pooh was also closed. Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln was closed. So you know, it was like, I wouldn't say it was the best Disney trip our families ever had, and we've had a lot to compare it to. But I mean, it's always, you know, the baby's first trip is always special. Her first ride ever was Peter Pan. She liked the rides that she went on. She fell asleep on a couple of them, but there weren't any that she got on and like cried and shit. So she definitely reacted.
Cried and then shit.
She cried and then shit and then cried some more. So it was pretty fun. It was, you know, exhausting. I brought the total wrong shoes, so my feet were in agony, you know, for the entire week. They didn't get back to normal until we'd been home for like 2 days. I was like waking up at home and still placing my feet on the floor out of bed in the morning and being in pain.
Oh, gosh.
Like I fucked them up.
You should bring hot high heels.
Yes, I'm Gloria.
That's Katie's MO. Bring high heels.
No, I wore like my most comfortable pair of Vans, but like Vans don't have a lot of support to begin with. And these are my oldest pair that are so broke down. And so they're very comfortable for a day, but they were not up for Disney.
Oh yeah. I wear Brooks or Reebok.
Hokas
or whatever. I look like a huge loser, but I'm like, but my feet feel great.
Yes.
Because I'm walking like 9 miles.
I will be correcting that on our next visit.
Yeah. Sorry. But glad it went well.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. What's new with you?
We're preparing to go on another trip. We're going tomorrow to Lobster Fest.
Lobster Fest.
Our annual Lobster Fest. We had a bit of a worry because there was forest fires right where we're going.
Oh, that's right. Up in Oregon.
Mm-hmm. So it was really bad. I mean, luckily, we were able to rebook in Eugene, Oregon, which seems fine, you know, and the air quality is pretty decent over there. So we're not, we'll go there instead. But people are flying in from all over the country. So it's not like, oh, well, we're just going to do something else. So, you know, really quick pivot. Yeah. We have to at least have it in the same state, you know. But Victor and I are driving because we're not going to fly
to Oregon. Yeah.
Yeah. We're like, well, we could just, basically, we looked it up and it's the same as when we drive to Oceanside to his mom's house.
Right.
Same distance.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, we'll just drive.
California's hella long.
Yeah, it's really freaking long. And we live in NorCal and that's like not even, it should be called Middle California.
Yeah, that's true, because there's quite a bit north of us.
Yeah, there's so much more. So we're excited. We rented one Airbnb. We call it for the olds because we're old and need our sleep. And the other one's bigger, and it's a compound, basically, of other lobsters. So it's fun. We always, like, cook out, do hiking, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And play cards and whatever.
That's so cool.
So, yeah, it's fun. It's, like, people of all ages, different backgrounds who have, like, just come together and, like, got to know each other. So yeah.
I know our consistent listeners will know who the lobsters are, but you haven't mentioned who are the lobsters.
Well, two were on the podcast before. So the lobsters are, I play World of Warcraft Classic. So our guild is called Lobster Squad. And as a joke, they got together, I think it's 5 years now. Mm-hmm. 5 years ago, they got together on a whim. They met up with each other. And it was, a few people, like five or six. And they, as a joke, they're like, well, what should we call this? And they're like, how about Lobster Fest? It's like a joke. But anyway, we've been calling that it that ever since.
Yeah.
And it's grown a lot. Last year was too many people. I think it was like 24.
Wasn't there like a fire last year?
No, there was a gas leak.
A gas leak. That's what it was.
And we called it the... One of our killed mates, he was taking a nap in the gas house.
Yeah.
And then we kind of designed these t-shirts that we kind of jokingly were like, we'll have these made. But is it I survived the gas house at Lobster Fest?
Yeah.
But that worked out. And I'm like, why are we, people keep trying to boil the lobsters, like set us on fire. And
like nobody likes lobsters. you guys should make up a dance and call it the lobster roll.
The lobster roll.
like the Tootsie Roll. But
we just like succumb to the murder that obviously wants to happen to us.
Absolutely.
So we're excited. And then I'm just, you know, getting my classroom ready. School starting.
Oh, God. So soon.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yes. I did one huge, huge thing that's been on my to-do list for 2 years.
Yeah.
Which was organize all of my classroom library.
Excellent. Which was so satisfying.
Oh, it was like...
And then you kids better keep this in order.
I enlisted my two children to help me. Mm-hmm. And it took like 2 days.
Wow.
Like days to get them all sorted on desks. We did post-its on the different desks. Yeah. Like Pete the Cat, Pop Pop Fish, Piggy and Gerald. And then nonfiction, like... history, all that stuff. So finally I have them in bins with post-its, and then I designed little book bin labels. That's the life of a teacher, where you're like, yay, I did it. And
you're like, oh my God, excited. It's going to look so amazing for a day.
Yeah. Well, that's the hope. I'll have my library helpers and be like, put them where, and then it's photos, or it's like pictures of what
the character
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, even if they can't read, I'm like, you should know that's freaking.
That's Pete the Cat right
that's
there.
That's Arthur. Okay. Arthur the Aardvark. That's where the book goes. So we'll see. Fingers crossed. But it cannot get as janky as it was.
Yeah.
It's like basically impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Even if these first graders are very mischievous this year, it's like, it would be like everyone took a big box, all the bins, and piled them and mixed them all up, which won't happen. So. Anyway, moving on. You're doing our summary.
Yes.
Or, recap.
Mm-hmm. So, as Meredith mentioned, Urban Legend came out in 1998, a glorious year for some.
I was apparently a sophomore in high school.
Yeah. I mean, in 98, like, I got my driver's license in 98, and the world was my oyster, and so it was a good time for me. I keep, you know, calling back to this whole ensemble cast element of our theme this summer. And this perfectly, like, this takes the cake. You know, like, I know what you did last summer. We had that little core of four, and then there were a couple of other familiar faces. And then I'm totally blanking on the movie we did last time.
Final Destination?
Final Destination. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, again, you had a slightly larger core. But in this one, you know, you have that same MO, and it's set on a college campus instead of high school students. But there's Jared Leto, Alicia Witt, Rebecca Gayhart, Joshua Jackson, Tara Reid, and then bit roles of familiar faces, Robert Englund and Danielle Harris.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She was Tosh.
Yeah, she was Tosh. And those of you that don't know, she was in the Halloween sequels where she played Laurie's daughter before they abandoned that storyline. And then she came back and made the Rob Zombie sequel or remakes of the Halloween franchise as well.
She did a great job.
She's very, very awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the film starts with a car driving down a dark, deserted highway. The driver, a young woman, is listening to a radio broadcast from Pendleton University.
Oh.
Yeah, because I think the university setting is another, like, really, like, perfect, common, regular, like, scene or setup for this type of movie. So it starts to rain just as her gas light comes on and she stops. I noticed that the price of gas was $1.14 a gallon on the sign.
Too steep for me.
So she honks for service and a dripping man with a stutter, played by Brad Dourif, which you mentioned last time, our voice of Chucky. He comes to fill up the car with gas,
Really quickly,
yeah.
He was stuttering. Mm-hmm. He did that as an homage to his first like role in One Who Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Oh, really?
Because he was also stuttering in that movie too.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, that's fun. I love that movie so much. I thought I would quickly.
Although his stutter plays a pretty big role in this whole scene. Like it wouldn't have worked. Like events wouldn't have played out the way they did if he didn't have a stutter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So he looks into her back seat and then he runs inside as the gas is pumping. Returning, he asks her to come inside, saying the credit card company's on the phone. She's like, oh, fine. She stuffs her mace into her purse because, you know, she's being cautious. She goes inside with him and he locks the door behind her just as she's realizing that there is no one on the phone. So she thinks that, you know, he's a predator. He tries to say something to her, but his stutter stops him and she freaks out. She maces him and then she busts through a window to escape from the building. She gets in the car and as she tears away, he is finally able to get the words out and scream after the car racing away, "Someone's in the back seat." Mm-hmm. So again, like if he had been able to communicate clearly, all of that confusion could have been avoided.
All true. All true.
So, and then moments later, a shadow rises in the back seat of the car behind her. And then we see an axe smash out through the driver window. So we assume that it, you know, went through her first.
I'm never going to be able to watch that scene without thinking of Scary Movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where she's like singing like really badly. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Because so she's singing. It's Total Eclipse of the Sun is the song that she's singing in this. And she's doing a very bad job.
She's like, every now and then I fall apart.
Okay, so now we're at the university radio station watching Sasha, who's played by Tara Reid, host her advice broadcast. Also tuning into the show from the school cafe is Natalie, who is Alicia Witt's character, Brenda, who is Rebecca Gayhart's character, and Paul, who is Jared Leto's character, and then also Sasha's boyfriend, Parker, who's telling them all a story about a professor who went on a killing rampage at Stanley Hall 25 years prior, a massacre that is memorialized every year with a frat party. Mm-hmm. Paul, who writes for the school paper, calls Parker out for the, quote, bullshit story you hear on every campus in the Northeast. So he's like, no, I swear that happened here. And he's like, okay, every school you go to, they say, oh, I swear it happened here. Paul leaves and Brenda swoons over him to Natalie. She's like, oh, my God, he's so cute. Do you think he was looking at me? And she's like, no, sorry.
She didn't actually say anything. Yeah. I don't think she's like, ha ha.
But it's important for us to get this piece of information that Brenda has a huge crush on Paul. Mm-hmm. And who wouldn't? It's fucking Jared Leto in the 90s.
Yeah, he was, he was Jordan Catalano. So
he was pretty gorgeous. Mm-hmm. See, I grew up without cable, so I found out later on that he originated in a show called My So-Called Life, but I've never actually seen the show.
Oh, I did a rewatch 2 years ago or last year. Yeah. Something else like this.
Does it stand up?
It's good. Yeah, it's a little cringy. Okay. But it's something that's like nostalgia. I think I didn't watch it probably until college, honestly, because mm-hmm. I didn't have cable either. So yeah. It just like it was on, I don't know, probably like VH1 or something. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was like, oh, what's this? And I was like, oh, he's not bad looking.
He's a cutie. Okay, next, Natalie and Brenda are standing outside the boarded up Stanley Hall, the site of the alleged massacre, and they're trying to scare each other until they hear screams from inside and are like, yeah, let's get the hell out of here. And as they're turning to go, they turn right into the first jump scare of the movie, which is the arrival of Damon, a classmate played by Joshua Jackson. Mm-hmm. And they're like, they're not pals. They're like, Damon. Like, they know each other. They're kind of friends. But it's like, ew, Damon.
Because he's kind of a sleaze.
Yeah, a little bit. So Natalie arrives back at her own dorm. She gets startled by the spooky janitor in the process and her arrival. And she enters her dark dorm room. Flicking on the light, she gets screamed at by her roommate, Tosh, who is, as we mentioned, Daniel Harris's character, who is, as I put, in flagrante delicto with some guy.
Getting railed.
And she yells at Natalie to turn the light back off. So I was like, fine, sorry. Ah. And as the moaning continues into the night, Natalie just pops in some earbuds and goes to sleep. You can tell this is not her first rodeo with her roommate.
Yeah, she just was put on some Sarah McLachlan or whatever in her earbuds. Right,
with her lavender sheets.
Yeah, she's like, oh, and then meanwhile, Tosh has, like, pleather.
And pleather sheets, yeah.
Pleather sheets.
She's super goth, like Marilyn Manson. I'm like,
how do you not sweat your tits off with that? I wanted to be her. I was like,
oh, of course, God. You were like, oh, my God, she's so amazing. Like, who wants to be cool. Whiny Alicia Witt's character? Like, yeah, redheads.
But you could be cool and chain smoking.
Right?
And hooking up with randoms.
Hooking up with people. Okay, so next day, Natalie's in class with Professor Wexler, who is Robert Englund's character. And I shouldn't have to tell our listeners that Robert Englund is Freddy Krueger, but I will anyway, just in case.
In case there are any sweet baby angels who have not watched
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Mm-hmm.
So Professor Wexler's giving a lecture about urban legends, what he defines as contemporary folklore for the purpose of cultural admonition. Suddenly, his watch alarm goes off with a distinct ring, and Brenda's giggling gets her called up to help with a demonstration. Wexler has her eat some Pop Rocks, and then he offers her a sip of Pepsi, but she refuses, saying that supposedly combining the two will make your stomach burst. Mm-hmm. So from the crowd, Damon, our smarmy Damon, volunteers.
Smarmy Damon.
he comes forward to the front of the lecture hall, eats the Pop Rocks, drinks the Pepsi, and is just, you know, just going at it. And as Wexler is what I told you sewing to the class, like, see, it's just total bullshit. Damon starts choking and foaming at the mouth. He collapses to the floor and everybody is freaking out until his eyes pop open and we see it's just a prank.
Oh, what a little scamp.
He's such a scamp.
Mm-hmm.
But that
establishes that he is a prankster.
He is a prankster. You cannot trust what Damon will get up to next.
Mm-hmm.
Outside after class, Natalie and Brenda see the campus newspaper that's reporting on the girl killed in the opening sequence, named Michelle Mancini. Paul, who is our journalist, appears and argues with the campus security woman, Reese, and the dean, who are collecting all the papers, you know, because they don't want this story spread amongst the student population. And Paul's like, you're journalistic, you know, free speech, blah, 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 blah.
I love Loretta Devine, though, who plays Reese.
Yeah, she's great.
She's fantastic. And she's like, I'll tell you what.
So this is the safest campus in the Northeast, and I plan on keeping it that way.
Take these newspapers and stick them up your butt.
Straight up your blue-eyed ass. anyway.
She improvised those lines.
Yeah, she did. She did. She was riffing. Natalie also chastises Paul for being insensitive about the death of this girl, because he's just kind of like, it's just a story. And she's like, this was a person. So a little bit later, the group, all the friends are together and they're discussing Michelle's death. And they all claim to not have known her, including Natalie. They were like, you know, she went here. She was in our, you know, grade or whatever. Didn't even know. No, none of us knew her. Back in her dorm room, Natalie argues with Tosh. I love this, over the use of the phone line, because Tosh is online and Natalie picks up the phone and is like, she's like, yeah. Shit.
She was just, you know, jamming out to some Monster Magnet or whatever it was.
I don't even know what that is.
And the line was going, ding, ding. Mm-hmm. For our younger listeners, that was something you had to contend with. Either you had the phone working or you got to use the internet, but not both.
Yes. Your internet came through your phone line, people.
It was a different time.
That's how you accessed the internet.
Yeah, you had to dial up.
Yep. And then nobody could call you and nobody could use the phone while you were online.
So your parents would get pissed. They'd be like, okay, that's enough of this crap.
Yeah, get off the phone.
Yeah.
So Tosh storms out, and so Natalie checks her messages, including one from her mom, indicating that Natalie did, in fact, know Michelle. Natalie pulls out a high school yearbook and looks at pictures of her and Michelle, showing that they're clearly cheerleading besties. Damon shows up to Natalie's room, and in an effort to make her feel better, takes her out for a drive to talk. This was my favorite little Easter egg, is it's an old, you know, beat up car and it doesn't start right away. When it finally starts, the radio blares on with Paula Cole's I Don't Want to Wait.
Oh, no.
Because this was like when Joshua Jackson was trying to transition from his like being pigeonholed as Pacey on Dawson's Creek to like having a film career.
And he's so, like, oh, God, no.
A little cheeky there.
Yeah.
So he parks them out in the trees, and Natalie tells Damon that she was friends with Michelle. So she admits having known her. He, in a totally douchey way, tries to put the moves on her, but she sees right through him. She ends up actually punching him. He gets out of the car to pee. And while he's doing so, an unseen assailant behind him throws a rope around his neck. He's struggling with the assailant as Natalie waits annoyed in the car. She finally gets out and calls out to him. And then she's surprised by the hooded assailant and she jumps into the driver's seat of the car. And while she's struggling to get this piece of shit car started, we see the assailant loop a rope over the station wagon's hitch. And inside the car, something is slamming into the roof repeatedly above Natalie's head, denting it. And then there's a squeaking sound that is soon revealed from the outside of the car to be the toes of Damon's sneakers as he's dangling from the noose hung above the car. Natalie finally gets the car started and tears away, which of course tows the rope that, you know, got hitched to the back of the vehicle and strings Damon's noose high up into the tree. But once the rope is taut, she can't drive any further. And the hooded assailant is still after her. He kicks in the windshield. So she throws the car in reverse, which releases Damon's body straight through said windshield, which is awesome. He's like super dead.
And then you're like, is this a prank? Would he just like trash his own
right, stuff? Exactly. Exactly.
In a jape. I'll just crash my car to get
out. Yeah, it's totally worth it. Natalie escapes from the car and goes straight to Reese at campus security. But when Reese drives them back out to the spot, the car and Damon are both gone. And so then
well,
it's like,
well, the killer got that piece of shit car started. So
yeah, slammed on that dash just long enough.
Mm-hmm.
So back at the cafe, Parker tries to convince Natalie that it was just another practical joke. And then he makes the connection that the way Damon died follows an urban legend. And Natalie realizes that Michelle's death was an urban legend as well. So later, Natalie hits the library to check out the Encyclopedia of Urban Legends, which I'm like, I wonder if that book actually exists. You that, have it. If
that
it
one does.
Doesn't,
but I have several.
A similar one.
Several urban legend books.
Natalie runs into Sasha at the library and they look at the book together. They read about the gang high beam initiation urban legend, which Sasha's like, this one I know is true. It happened in my hometown. And they also...
Like, no, it didn't, you idiot.
You asshole. And then they also notice that Damon had also checked the book out previously. So like, it's all very suspicious.
What a little scamp.
So in the dorm room, Tasha's online again looking to hook up and she finds a taker.
She's goth for goth.
Is that what it was called?
Yes. I always like freeze with this, like when it's technology in the early 90s, I'm like always, or like in the 90s, mm-hmm. I'm like, what are they looking at? What is this?
What is this browser called? What yeah. is this search engine called?
Yeah.
That's how I felt in I Know What You Did Last Summer when they were like, we got to find out about David Egan.
Well, and the chat room is called Goth for Goth.
Yeah.
Who hasn't, you know, searched for some strange on Goth for Goth?
I mean, I take the fifth. So she sends the person the IM, quote, tell me what room you're in before she leaves her desk to freshen up in the bathroom. And when she returns to her desk, she finds the reply, yours. And you're like, oh, shit.
She's like...
She's like, oh, wait, what?
Now I'm actually concerned. I was mostly mad, but now I'm nervous.
So immediately after she sees that reply, she's attacked and she struggles with the assailant on the bed as Natalie returns to the dorm room. But Natalie, again, not her first rodeo. She has learned her lesson. She ignores the grunting and squealing on the bed and doesn't turn on the light, going to bed with her headphones in.
Well, the chicks that are outside, too, of her dorm and they're like, oh, you know, be warned again. Elvira is raising the dead.
Yeah, because they could all hear the noise and they just assumed it was more of Tasha's rough sex.
Yeah.
So Natalie awakes in the morning to find Tasha's dead body on her bed and the message written in Tasha's blood on the wall, aren't you glad you didn't turn on the light?
Oh.
Very, very scary.
And she's like, oh, no.
Oh, no. Now I don't have a roommate, which, you know, my roommate moved home halfway through my sophomore year. And having your own dorm room is pretty cool.
Oh,
yeah.
That is nice. Mm-hmm. I never had a dorm room. I just only had like an apartment that I shared.
OK.
So,
yeah, we had to at USF. We were required to live on campus in the dorms freshman and sophomore year. So, yeah, I did the whole very cliche two girls to a room. Everybody shares the bathroom at the end of the hall dorm experience, which was, it's fun. I wouldn't do it, want to do it forever, but
you did it the one. You
it's a fun
it,
experience.
And then you can move on.
Unfortunately, the roommate that I got randomly assigned immediately became one of my best friends. And so.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Her name was also Katie. I was about to say oddly, but it's not that odd because there were like 2 million Katies born in like the 5 years I'm I was like, born.
What year were we? Yeah. What years were we born?
If you weren't named Katie, you were named Jennifer.
If you weren't named Katie or Jennifer, you were named Rebecca.
Okay, so due to the fact that Natalie didn't actually see anyone else in the room, the fact that Tosh was on lithium for depression, and that her death was by cut wrists, the dean and Reese determine it to be a suicide. They're like, well, you didn't see anybody and blah, blah, blah. She just killed herself. Yeah.
And they're like, don't you see how many posters of Marilyn Manson she has?
She's clearly suicidal.
She obviously was bummed. And she's like, no, it's murder. Someone was in there.
Yeah, the game's afoot. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Natalie does not agree.
No, she's like, someone was there.
Yeah, she's like, what about the message on the wall? And the dean's like, a rather morbid suicide note.
Suicide note.
Like, what the fuck?
Who asked you?
But at the same time, that's like the quote unquote suicide note from I Know What You Did Last Summer, when it's like, I'll never forget last summer. Like, that's not a suicide note.
And they're like,
it's not even suicide, in his handwriting.
Suicide note.
They think everything's a suicide note.
Yeah. Stupid.
Okay, so Natalie fills Paul in on her theory about the deaths of Michelle, Damon, and now Tosh being the work of an urban legend serial killer. And she expands it to include the 25th anniversary of the Stanley Hall Massacre, which is that night. The two of them try to...
Like, that kind of sounds like bullshit.
But I like redheads, so let's do this. They try to research the event, and the spooky janitor tells them to talk to Wexler. Wexler is not in his office, so they break in. And in his closet, Natalie finds a familiar-looking hooded coat and an axe. Which, what professor doesn't have an axe in their office closet?
I have one right here.
Me too. Well, it's in my car. So Wexler returns and they hide in the closet, but he does end up catching them and takes them in front of the dean. The dean calls Natalie out on something that he came across in her file, probation for reckless endangerment. And so we're like, ooh, yeah. What now? We want to know more.
He's like, I think I know that you're actually a piece of crap.
Yeah. So, and they don't explain at this point, but our curiosity is piqued.
Yes. It seems a little bit odd for a seemingly sweet...
Yeah, she seems like Little Miss Perfect.
Yeah, redheaded girl who's not like... She's not like Tosh, basically. No, she's very like...
You would totally expect Tosh to have, recklessly endangered someone.
Yes.
But Natalie heads to the natatorium, where Brenda is swimming laps. Natalie watches from above as a figure in a hooded coat stalks the pool, but it turns out to be another swimmer. After Natalie confesses to Brenda that she did know Michelle, and she tells the story of she and Michelle in high school playing a practical joke based on the gang high beam initiation urban legend that resulted in an accident that killed another driver, and that person was a boy their age. She and Michelle both got probation, I put, because of course they were well-off white girls.
Yep.
So they were like, you killed someone through reckless endangerment.
Like, it was just a joke.
And they're like, hey. Oh, okay, probation then.
I know.
Pick up some trash.
we joke, but it's like so true.
100% true. 100% true. Any number of other demographics would have been like, 3-2 deal.
The judge is like, oh, we can't ruin the rest of their lives.
They're so pretty.
One little mistake.
Yeah, funny, not funny. So Brenda convinces Natalie to come to the frat party that night to get her mind off things. Back in the news office, Paul finds an old issue of the school paper from the Stanley Hall Massacre revealing that Professor Wexler, a student at the time, was the sole survivor of the event. The spooky janitor lurks around as well. Then we see the dean resisting Reese's effort to get more support for the weekend. And I put so many suspects. They're like, ooh, this person's being shady. Ooh, this person's being shady. Ooh, what about this person? Like, they're really trying to make you think anybody could be the killer.
Yeah. And you're like, and those guys have been in scary movies before. So that's friggin' Freddy. You can't trust him.
Absolutely. Where's his claws? I think you could have thought that the dean was the suspect until he himself is attacked by the hooded assailant in a parking garage and his own car rolls over him, right over those severe tire damage claw thingies coming out of the ground, which is pretty gruesome. Yeah,
and he was killed in another urban legend.
Didn't know that one was as well. I mean, they're all supposed to be.
I have it right here.
Oh, my goodness. Well, hold your horses. We'll get to that soon enough.
Okay.
We have to find out what's happening with this riveting whodunit. That was a little bit of a hearty chortle for my Okay, at the frat party, Paul finds Natalie and fills her in on his discovery about Wexler and his theory that the professor is the killer. Their tender moment leads to a kiss, which Brenda walks in on. She's pissed at Natalie and she rushes outside in tears
because she's like, liked him.
You kissed my crush. Meanwhile, Reese finds Wexler's office completely trashed. We notice that the axe is gone from his closet before she slips and falls in this huge puddle of blood. Mm-hmm. But then with
like
that,
right on her ass. Right. She's like, oh, what the fuck?
Ass fall in the blood. But then that scene cuts. And so we don't know what the source of the blood is. Mm-hmm. The cut is back to the frat house. Paul tries to get Parker to end the party because of the danger. But Parker turns it around, suggesting Paul is the killer. So Paul leaves for help just before Sasha leaves to report for her radio show. So the two of them exit the party. Parker then gets a call that his phone's caller ID shows is coming from Damon. So he figures it's another prank and he's joking along with it. It's very much like, what's your favorite scary movie type of call?
He's like, your mom. Wait, what?
She's a horror show. But the caller relates that, the urban legend about the dog in the microwave. And so Parker runs to the kitchen to find his cute little Westie dead. Like, he just, like, pops the microwave open, and then we see the viewpoint from inside the microwave out, and there's just, like, blood and guts and gore all over the interior of the microwave.
Poor Hootie.
It was very sad. Well, I mean, that poor dog. He, like, pierced its nose and was giving it beer.
Yeah, he didn't have a great life.
Parker was not a responsible pet owner. We'll just put it like that.
He wasn't.
But Westy did not deserve to die in the microwave.
No.
Parker runs to the bathroom to puke, but the assailant turns up and then ties Parker up and pours Pop Rocks and drain cleaner down his throat with a beer bong. Mm-hmm. Now, is that, I mean, I guess that's the Pop Rocks urban legend.
Yeah.
Being used there.
It's a little mix. A little mishmash.
A little bit of a dibble dabble. Because we know that if it had just been Pop Rocks and Pepsi, I mean, he might have choked to death, but he wouldn't have actually, like, died, like, for sure. But drain cleaner and Pop Rocks is a safer
That'll definitely get
strategy.
The job done.
Yeah. So the next stop for the killer is the radio station, where he starts by attacking Sasha's producer before going after her. Back at the frat party, they're listening to Sasha's attack over the broadcast of her show, but they write it off as a performance art piece. Natalie, of course, doesn't believe that, and she runs off to the radio station, and Sasha is still running from the killer. And so this is funny, like, they show, like, Alicia Witt running through the dark in the rain to get to the radio station, like, her hair's all bedraggled all over her face, and she has, like, this big dumb look on her face, and she's running for, like, an hour. Mm-hmm. And then Sasha, meanwhile, is running all over the radio station for, like, an hour trying to get away from the killer.
Yeah.
So Natalie arrives at the station building just in time to see Sasha killed with an axe through a window of an upper level. And the killer looks down and sees Natalie and creepily waves to her. So she's like, oh, hey, buddy.
I'm like, Sasha, that was not an urban legend. That was just straight up murder.
Yeah.
Straight up kills.
Yeah, you're right. There was nothing urban legend-y about Sasha's death. Okay, so now Natalie runs to Paul's dorm, and he's arriving at the same time. She follows him into the room, but then she suspiciously asks where he's been, because all of a sudden, you know, again, it's pointing it to everyone. Like, it could be anyone. Where were you? What were you doing? Like, Sasha was just killed. Where have you been?
And he gets all defensive. He's like, what? I was all over.
I can't find Reese. I can't find the dean. Everybody's gone. And also the phone is dead, his dorm phone line. And so they run out into the storm together to get help, and they run right into Brenda. And then they tell Brenda that Sasha's dead. Oh, my God. And then the three of them run off. And then meanwhile, Reese had followed. She was listening to the broadcast. So she had gone to the radio station and she discovers Sasha's body. Okay. So now Paul is driving the two girls, Brenda and Natalie, and they notice a smell in the car. Brenda suggests stopping at a gas station to see if their phones work. And when Paul leaves them alone in the car, they make up from their fight. And she's like, I'm sorry, you guys belong together. And you're like, okay, Brenda, that was fast. Mm-hmm. And just before, they hear the same watch alarm as Wexler's from class. And they're like, so they get out and they follow the sound to the rear of the car and they discover Wexler's body in the back of Paul's station wagon. And I love this when Brenda like delivers the line, like I said, he's all yours.
And then they're like, yeah, they look at him. They're like, ah, like right away into the forest.
So now they're certain that Paul is the killer because mm-hmm. Wexler's body's in the back of Paul's car.
And he's like, what?
What's going on? Why are you running away from me? So the girls, as Meredith said, they run off into the night. Paul chases, and the girls end up separated. Natalie hears Brenda's scream from a distance, and she runs on. She waves down a passing truck, and oh my gosh, it's the spooky janitor. Mm-hmm. So in the truck, Natalie sees a hooded coat like the killer wears. And she's like, oh, no, it's not Paul. It's you. And so she demands to be let out of the truck, but fails, basically, because he's like, what? No, don't be stupid. I'm not letting you out here. And then, like, her door doesn't open from the inside because all these vehicles in this movie are busted pieces of crap.
And he's like, are you on? He's like, what's going on with you people? Like, he thinks
that all the... What's wrong with you?
He thinks they're all, like, hopped up on drugs.
Yeah, they are. Okay, so suddenly an oncoming car approaches with its headlights off. And Natalie's like, oh, no. And you can cut, you, if you were looking for it, you would see that it's Paul's station wagon. But mm-hmm. it's dark. You can't, you know, necessarily tell that. Natalie screams for the janitor to not flash his lights at it, at the car. But he does. He's like, oh, stupid kids driving with their headlights off. And so he flashes his lights at the other vehicle. And the car does a 180 and starts chasing them, of course. The car, as we see now, is driven by the hooded killer, runs them off the road. And Natalie gets out of the wreck and is again running through the night. She gets back to campus and then ends up following Brenda's screams to Stanley Hall, mm-hmm. the boarded up Stanley Hall.
Yeah, and the poor custodian janitor guy, he's just like,
left. He's like probably dead in that wreck or like mortally wounded and she just ditched him.
She's like, see ya. Like, she just runs off. He's and like we never find kids. Out if that guy made it or not. He just assumes all the college kids are on PCP and he hates them.
So you should lift the car off of me and give like, your angel dust power. I know. So Natalie climbs through broken boards across a window at Stanley Hall, but then ends up getting trapped in an upstairs room where we get the whole body discovery scene. The very cliche of everywhere you turn, it's the revelation of a dead body.
And yeah, it's very like Halloween, like open the cupboard. Ah, look over here. Ah,
well, and it's and I Know What You Did Last Summer too. And there's like the bodies in the ice, like, what are they doing here?
Yeah.
So it's the bodies of Parker, the Dean, and Damon. She, you know, comes across one by one in very shocking manners. She then finds her way into a room filled with lit candles, and Brenda is laid out across a bare mattress with her eyes closed. So Natalie is like, oh, she's dead or whatever. So she turns her back on the bed to sob dramatically.
She's like, I'm too late
and I'm all alone. And then Brenda rises slowly behind her and clocks her across the head. And then she smiles. Mm-hmm. My favorite thing is what they did cosmetically with Brenda's character for this scene. Like after we're like, oh, no, it's her. Because I knew her. She was the Noxzema girl. Right.
Yeah.
She was in a whole series of Noxzema commercials, you know, with her flawless skin and everything. And she has this great curly hair. Like she's one of those people like really, really embraced this very curly hair that she had.
It's like a Carrie Russell kind of hair, too. Like just gorgeous.
Yes.
Kind of blondish brown.
Yeah. Very shiny. Beautiful. And, you know, perfectly maintained. And so but in this scene, they like you know, made it just enough poofier and not frizzy, but just a little bit wilder. Like, they really worked with this gorgeous big head of curly hair that she had and just made it look insane.
Because like, how unhinged could we make you look?
Because that and her, like, her facial expressions, like, she sold it in this scene. Like, she looked like a fucking psychopath.
Mm-hmm. And she had, like, smudged eyeliner and she's like, ugh.
Yeah, like, and extra, too. Like, extra black eyeliner all of a sudden. Like, where did it come from? Anyway, so she like slowly rises off of the bed with her hair all bigger than it was before. Like, I'm sure it's just the humidity from the rain.
But, yeah, it's a problem.
Then this creepy, creepy smile. So now Natalie comes to because, you know, she got knocked out. She's tied up on that same bed and she's faced with the hooded killer who pulls back the hood to reveal that it is Brenda. Brenda levels up her villain disclosure speech with an actual slideshow. It's not just the how did I do it. It's like, look, I have photos.
She's like, we're in college. We have to have visual aids.
Visual aids. And this is the era of technology. But it was like one of those old ass carousel slide machines. I'm like, where'd she even find one? And they are.
She like checked it out from the library or from whatever the
audio visual department.
She's like, I need this for a thing,
for a presentation.
Don't ask questions
in my home ec class. So the photos that she shows reveal that the boy Natalie and Michelle killed was actually Brenda's fiance. Mm-hmm. So we have our motive for why she's doing all of this.
You know, I'm like
respect.
I'm like, these bitches got
maybe if they'd gone to prison, she wouldn't have felt like she needed to do this.
Yeah, no vindication. No, yeah. Like, they barely got a slap on the wrist.
Mm-hmm. And still, like, got to go off to your nice posh college.
Yeah, and then you got to be like, oh, yeah, I did a thing. It was very bad. It was a bad girl.
It was a long time ago. It was such like a long 6 time. Months.
It was like, so, yeah.
Right?
So I'm like, okay, well, Brenda had a right to some kind of vindication. Maybe not murdering people who had nothing to do with it. Yeah. But, like,
Going after Michelle and Natalie, maybe.
Made sense.
Yeah. Okay. So Brenda also reveals at this point that the culmination of her whole urban legend plan was to enact the kidney heist urban legend on Natalie, as well as pinning the murder spree on Wexler. So she's got this brilliant plan. Everything's all worked out. Brenda starts stabbing away at Natalie's belly for this whole kidney heist thing.
She's really funny. She's like, I'm such a dope in anatomy.
Yeah. just like the first organ I see, I'll just grab it. yeah, it's pretty funny. But then as she gets started, Reese shows up just in time. Reese, and she's got her gun. She frees Natalie, but then she struggles with Brenda, who ends up with Reese's gun. So next, Paul shows up. And then during the struggle, between Brenda and Reese, Reese is knocked out on the floor. I think she got winged. She got shot and winged, mm-hmm. But she's down on the ground. So next, Paul shows up and starts manipulating Brenda, pretending that he wants to work with her for the news story, but she doesn't fall for it. She is about to shoot them when Reese pops up with her other gun and shoots Brenda, but she just wings Brenda. So Natalie then has to pick up the gun Brenda dropped and shoot her again, which makes her fly dramatically backward out the window.
As she screams. With her crazy blonde
or crazy curls, not blonde,
but like crazy curls were flying around,
and you're like, oh, phew, we made it. And so as Paul and Natalie drive away, she muses about how the events would become their own urban legend. And Paul says, if this is an urban legend, at what point do we get to the twist? Just as Brenda rises up in the back seat with an axe. So Paul ends up crashing the car into the side of a bridge, which somehow launches Brenda through the windshield and into the river. They watch her float away, and then Natalie and Paul embrace to the sound of far-off approaching sirens. So now it fades into the voice of a guy relating this whole story in another anonymous college common room, ending with the statement that they never found the body. All of his friends mock him, just like at the beginning of this film. And one of the girls actually says, like, oh, yeah, so-and-so was my sister's roommate. And Brenda's the girl in that Noxzema commercial. And it's like, ha, she actually was. But only one voice in the chorus claims to believe the storyteller, and it pans over to Brenda, whose hair is straightened, so who would recognize her?
And I'm like, how is Brenda getting, like, money for college from a parent still? Like,
good question. They like don't know any of this happened at all, and they're like transferring again.
What? Okay.
And so Brenda leans in, primed to tell, quote, how the story really goes. Mm-hmm. And that is the end of Urban Legend.
Really good recap or synopsis or whatever.
Thank you. Did you think it was scary?
I thought it was, when I first saw it, I thought it was a little bit suspenseful. Mm-hmm. But no. I think it's fun.
Yeah.
I really like watching it. It's really cheesy. It's not as tight as like Scream, for mm-hmm. example. But I still enjoy it. I think it's really fun. And I like the different nods to different characters, like,
backgrounds, you know,
the you know, gas station attendant and, you know, Robert England. And I love the adding to it. And then it helps us with being suspicious of other people because we're like, they already are scary. Mm-hmm. You know, they've
we already perceive them as bad guys. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it was really fun. I like that it was on a college campus. I loved Tosh, her roommate, who's just so unlikable and horrible. And then you're like, oh, man, she got killed and in a horrifying way. And the scary message on the wall. That was really good. I thought it was really fun. But is it scary now still? No.
No.
I don't think so.
It's too silly a little bit. Yeah, like too cheesy.
Well, do you think it's scary?
No. And I don't know. I think because I react a lot more to jump scares than you. I mean, you don't react at all to jump scares. But when I'm seeing a movie for the first time, especially if I'm in the theater, I react very strongly to jump scares. So there's different kinds of scary. And this is not the kind of movie that would like stay with you and leave you creeped out or spooked or whatever afterward. But it did play on the jump scare element a good amount, mm-hmm. so that if you were somebody who was primed for that and watching it for the first time under those circumstances, like, it probably would have been pretty successful with that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it was a lot of fun. I think that the premise was really creative, but like you say, comparing it to Scream, like Scream having that, you know, do you like scary movies, like that whole bit, but he wasn't killing people in the style of scary movies. That was just kind of like an element to the villain's character. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what made maybe this movie feel like a little bit more of a stretch in terms of being realistic enough to scare you. Mm-hmm. Because it was just silly enough that it didn't land in a way that was really frightening. You're like, this wouldn't actually happen, right?
Yeah, yeah, kind of contrived. You're like, how strong is this killer actually that able to do this different things?
Like, yeah, well, and that's the thing. Like, you know, when knowing that Brenda is the killer, going back and watching it another time, like, there's statements that she makes that all of a sudden have more meaning because you know the whole story. But then also when you're watching the attack and the killing scenes, you're like, I'm sorry, what? She's like, what, 5'4", probably 105 pounds, like
soaking wet.
Yeah. How is she doing this?
She's just so mad.
She's so she's angry. She's fueled by her curls and noxzema. But like you said, and I mentioned earlier, that college campus setting, I think, is a really fun one. It's a really cool one. And it actually prompted me yesterday to put Scream 2 back on. Mm-hmm. Which was another one that I had forgotten. I know we did our episode on Scream quite a while ago now, and we talked about the sequels in that episode, but not really in depth. But I'm watching Scream 2, and it's like it had just, I mean, it probably came out maybe even the same year as Urban Legend. I wouldn't mm-hmm. be surprised because Scream came out in 96.
Yeah.
And so this would have only been a couple years later. But in Scream 2, in addition to like all of the returning actors of like Neve Campbell and Jamie Kennedy and Courtney Cox and David Arquette, there was also Joshua Jackson again, mm-hmm. Timothy Oliphant, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Rebecca Gayhart's in it again, Portia de Rossi, Tori Spelling, Luke Wilson. Like, there's all of these. They did kind of the same thing. And so we almost could have put Scream 2 into this theme for our summer category. I mean, Scream 1 doesn't really belong there because it's too good.
Yeah, it's too good. And aside from Drew Barrymore, I would say like a lot of the cast was not super well.
Yeah, they weren't big stars yet. This was their big. I mean, Neve Campbell, you know, she'd been on Party of Five. Mm-hmm. Party of Five. And all of them, you know, obviously were recognizable to some extent. But you're right, they weren't like big stars. Yeah, but Scream 2 had a lot in common with the other movies that we've talked about in this genre. And it took place on a college campus. And so mm-hmm. there's something that setting allows you to do with the story that's kind of unique. Like that there, it's not like everybody goes home. They all live on campus. Parents aren't there categorically.
Mm-hmm. And you're technically adults too. So you exactly. have to figure out your own shit.
Yeah.
And like, be like, is this normal? Or rationalize it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, oh, is this safe? Sure.
Sure.
Like,
why not? Who's here to tell us otherwise? My mom's three states away.
Here's the dean saying everything's fine. So let's believe him. It's the weekend. Everything's fine.
Probably shacked up with some tramp. But yeah, so I think that I like that element of urban legend. And I think it's fun. I think I think it's like a must watch for somebody that likes scary movies. Maybe not like a rewatch over and over again, and it's not going to terrify you, but I feel like you got to watch it. And one of the reasons is because of its utilization of the urban legends and telling those stories, which to some extent everybody's familiar with a little bit, and they pop up in other horror movies, but our listeners may not realize what an expert you really are on urban legends.
Yes, but before I dive into that, I do want to say Scream 2 is on a college campus, but I feel like urban legend, they really utilized their setting, and it was like kind of a gothic architecture, so it was really kind of very kind of creepy. And
The Scream 2 college camp, I think it was California school.
Yeah.
So you had like the theater setting was very collegiate element, but and the sorority houses, because then you can like connect it to like Black Christmas or other movies that utilize that setting.
Yes.
But you're right that the architecture, because the I just happened to catch Urban Legends took place in Maine, so it was the Northeast, and it was a very old campus with the big brick buildings, and so it was a different vibe.
Definitely. So I thought that was really, really fun and just added to the creep factor, I think. But I have a master's degree in criminology, and I did my dissertation on believing in kind of urban folklore, but like more modern kind of stuff, and how that impacts your fear of something happening to you.
Right.
And how that impacts your voting.
Okay.
And like
really
who
interesting.
You support, basically. Yeah. And so like I found that like the more afraid or the more you bought into these different things that were at the time, it was like the early 2000s, people were forwarding these stories on email through email.
Yeah.
And or telling verbally the stuff like this happened or whatever. And people were really buying into it, thinking this stuff had really happened. So, big surprise. The more afraid you are, the more likely you'll vote for people who are harder on crime, who are far more on the right leaning. But I did compile a bunch of my, so I have my scary stories to tell in the dark book that has two of the legends. And then I have a bunch that were from the movie that kind of it says kind of when they started cropping up and being told in different different states all around the country.
Yeah,
because
a lot of them like date back of generations and have like been updated over time for like modern society, but then some of them obviously like categorically have to be more recent, like anything involving a telephone can't be from Native American times.
No Wendigo skinwalkers,
right.
So I have some where they were from the movie, and then I included two that are I just think are really fun. So the first one's The Killer in the Backseat, and this is one retelling, and I think this one came out in 1990 something. This one started appearing in the late 60s, actually. Okay. And then was in an Ann Landers column in 82, being like, watch out for this.
Okay.
And you're like, this has never happened, really. Yeah. But one, it goes like this. A friend stopped at a pay at the pump gas station to get gas. Once she filled her gas tank, and after paying at the pump and starting to leave, the voice of the attendant inside came over the speaker. He told her that something happened with her card and she needed to come inside to pay. The lady was confused because the transaction showed that it was had completed and was approved. She relayed that to him and was getting ready to leave, but the attendant once again urged her to come in to pay or there was going to be some trouble. She proceeded to go inside and started arguing with the attendant about his threat, and he told her to calm down and please listen carefully. He said that while she was pumping gas, a guy slipped into the back seat of her car on the other side, and the attendant had already called the police. She became frightened and looked out in time to see her car door open and the guy slip out. The report is that there is a new gang initiation that's a thing to bring back women in their his or her car. One way they do this is crawling under cars while they're pumping gas at the gas station and at grocery stores in the nighttime. The other way is slipping into unattended cars and going in the back seat and kidnapping women. Please pass this on to other women, young and old alike. Be extra careful going to and from your car. And then they have a bunch of more like, please send this to your friends and family. Mm-hmm. So I got this stuff from like my aunt would send me this stuff. I'm like, this isn't true.
Yeah.
This didn't happen. But I mean, of course, there are stories where people did go in the back seat and like carjack them or go get some money from the ATM. Of course, I'm not saying that's never happened to people. It definitely has. But that kind of
making it seem like it's this epidemic of this like you say, specific action happening over and over again. And like so just frightening people.
Exactly. So there's a lot of different incarnations of this story, and it's been around for a while. And the killer in the backseat, it said it did occur in 64 in a city, and an escaped murderer had shown up to one of the detectives, and he had to shoot him or something. Like very specific, not a random thing. So it's like people are more afraid. And I think we've had this conversation where people are more afraid if it's like could happen to them.
Yeah.
Versus something that is like, you know, domestic or somebody like targeted.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, you think like, well, if I haven't done anything wrong, I should be safe. But if they're like, oh no, they'll just do this to anybody, then it doesn't matter if you're a good person or if you've never harmed anyone or whatever, because you could still be the victim.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So then there's also the High Beams gang initiation. It started in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of passed around Hell's Angels biker gang that they were said to be initiating inductees. But then by the time it started spreading around more, it was in the early 90s. And what kind of gangs do you think they were saying were doing this?
Yeah, biker gangs.
Yeah, people of color. And in Los Angeles, they were saying that. And so this is collected through email in 2010, actually. So people have been spreading this bullshit for a while. Please don't flash your headlights at any car with no headlights on. Police officer are working with the DARE program and issued this warning. If you are driving after dark and see an oncoming car with no headlights on, do not flash your headlights at them. It's common that the Bloods gang member initiation game, the new gang member under initiation drive along with their no headlights. Sorry, it's not typed well, so this is kind of tricky. And the first
you mean car it's, to not flash, peer edited?
It's not peer edited. The first car to flash their headlight at them is now his target, and he is now required to turn around and chase them and then shoot them and kill the individual in the vehicle in order to complete their initiation. And it's happening nationwide. So I'm like, no, that's stupid. And then there's
because everybody knows that there's like a nationwide network connecting all gangs so that they are using the same initiation tactics.
Yeah, obviously. And then there's the killer under the car. So it was collected. This is from 1994. I was told not to go shopping at the Tacoma Mall because women were being robbed there and there were men hiding under their cars. And the women would come back to their car with tons of packages. And when she was standing trying to open the car, a guy was hiding underneath her car and would slash her ankles with a razor so she couldn't get away and take her purse and packages and drive off with the car.
Okay, so the ankle slashing, that's what happened to the dean.
Yes. my aunt told me that. I think I was in college or something. Or no, I was an adult. Because I owned a house, so that wasn't actually that long ago. She's like, oh my gosh, don't go to North Park Mall. This has been happening. I was like, that's been spread for about 30 years. That's not a thing.
She's like, no, I just read it.
I just, someone said it happened to someone that they know. I'm like, oh, really?
Did they? Oh my gosh.
Oh, no. And then there's, aren't you glad that you didn't turn on the lights? This was a fun one because it's a little bit different from the one in the movie. This was from 1997. Okay, so supposedly at another college in the state, a girl was sitting late and went back to her dorm room to get some books or some notes. So she went to disturb her roommate. She didn't turn on the lights when she got her stuff off of her desk. So then later she went back to her room and she found her roommate was dead. And a note was written in lipstick on the mirror. And it said, aren't you glad you didn't turn on the light? So this is a different one. A young lady is alone in an apartment. She goes to bed with her dog on the floor beside her. In the middle of the night, she's woken up by a strange sound. She's alarmed, but she reaches down to her dog, who licks her hand. She's reassured, and she goes back to sleep. In the morning, she finds the dog hung in the shower where the dog slept. She picks up a note that says, humans can lick too.
Ew, no.
Didn't you? You never heard that one?
No.
I think I said that.
Like a picture was like somebody down on the floor licking her hand.
I think I said that around.
I'd be able to tell the difference between a human licking me and a dog licking me. I mean, even if it would have a large dog to have a large enough tongue, because like my dogs have very small
maybe
tongues.
Maybe the guy was like,
whoop. Just use the tip.
Just the tip. So that one's fun. I think I remember saying that at like sleepaway camp around the fire. I'm like, humans can lick too.
And
like,
no.
Everyone's like, no. Okay. And then there's the boyfriend's death, which has been around since the '70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, I think it's, pretty short. Hours after her boyfriend is, went in search of gasoline, a girl is rescued from her stranded car by the police. Though cautioned not to turn around, she does, and then she sees her boyfriend's lifeless body hanging from a branch, tree branch above the car. So this was went around in the 1964 from people at the University of Kansas. So it's been around for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And then there's more variations from the 90s. Tons.
Yeah, well, and that's the whole car lovers lane, like, one that, you know, that reminds me of Zodiac. And then, like, you know, the town that dreaded sundown or whatever, the Texas town.
Which was true.
Yeah. Obviously, both real, you know, real killers. And that one, I feel like, you know, because when Professor Wexler is talking about it in the beginning of this movie, and he calls them, you know, there were admonitions. And so he's telling the babysitter story and saying that the admonition is, you know, young women, mind your children or whatever. And so many of these stories, you know, I thought it was like kind of just a general understanding that they were supposed to like caution women against promiscuity. Right.
Don't be a skank.
Yeah, don't be in a car alone with a boyfriend. Dude out on a lover's lane, or you'll get killed.
With the hook.
And so all of those, like, you know, parking, like being in a parked car, especially out in a secluded area, like you would if you wanted to get busy in your car with your boyfriend. Mm-hmm. It was very much about, you know, controlling women and controlling women's sexuality and sexual expression, which is obviously something that would have become more of a thing in like the 60s. Or whatever, like it wouldn't have been something that people were super concerned about in decades before that.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's always like a message, like don't be skanky,
but that's the thing.
Don't be this, don't be that, and then you'll be
protected. With some of them, I don't see a shaming element. Like you say, most of them, like if the goal is to frighten you.
No. Yeah, like, well, okay, so for that one, don't be promiscuous with your boyfriend, but a lot of the other messages were like, well, you know, to be leery, be careful, look under your car, watch out, you know, you're going to go buy a lot of stuff at the mall and have so many bags, be careful.
Yeah. And I think that that's like frightening people to be more cautious just because something could happen to them is a unifying thread of all of them. But I always like thought that it was kind of unique, like that idea of, oh, it's shaming women is not common to all of them, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I think that it depends for sure. So, but that's also true for like a lot of final girl horror movies where it's like the girls who had sex would be killed first. Yeah. And, you know,
if you're Rose McGowan with your nipples out, you're definitely going to die in a garage door.
So what this one is, the microwave pet. This is from 1983. I once heard of an elderly lady who used to breed pedigree cats and exhibit them at shows. She specialized in Persian cats, and their long hair has always made it a difficult task to clean and groom them for showing. In order to cut down on the effort involved, the old lady had evolved the practice of first washing the cat and toweling them dry, and then finally giving it a brief warming in her electric oven. One Christmas, her cooker developed a fault, and so her son, by way of a Christmas present, brought her a brand new microwave oven. On the day of the next cat show, not understanding the basic difference in the technology between an ordinary cooker and a microwave oven, the old lady industriously watched her prize-winning Persian cat popped into the oven for a few seconds. There is really no meow nor any noise from the cat because the poor creature exploded the instant the oven microwave oven was switched on.
Yeah.
So don't microwave your pets.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like,
you kind of... Not understanding technology.
I feel like there should be some sort of, like, horror movie Mythbusters. because you gotta... Not that I would ever want to see this or condone trying it or whatever, but you gotta wonder what actually physically would happen. Like, the cat wouldn't explode, you know? Like, it's not like it's a bottle rocket.
Yeah.
Like, how would living tissue actually react to being microwaved?
I don't know. You can write in and ask if they can.
You're like, I'm not comfortable with the direction of this conversation, so let's go back to the story.
I'm like, I don't really know. How do you test that? And then there's one. This is not in the movie. This one I thought was really fun because this is another one my aunt told me to be scared of.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, okay.
She just wants to keep you safe, Meredith.
Please pass this along to your women friends. It's all capitals and exclamation points. I was approached yesterday afternoon around 3:30 in the Walmart parking lot at Forest Drive by two males asking what kind of perfume I was wearing. Then they asked if I'd like to sample some fabulous scents that they were willing to sell me at a very reasonable rate. I probably would have agreed had I not received an email some weeks ago warning of a wanna smell this neat perfume scam. That's in quotes. The men continue to stand between parked cars, I guess, to wait for someone else to, scam. I stopped a lady going towards them, pointed to them, and told her how I was sent an email at work about someone walking up to you at malls or parking lots and asking you to sniff perfume that they're selling on a cheap price. This is not perfume. It is ether.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, I'm laughing. When you sniff it, you'll pass out. And they'll take your wallet and your valuables and heaven knows what else. If it were not for the email, I probably not would have just sniffed the perfume. But thanks to the generosity of emailing friends, I was spared whatever might have happened to me. I want to do the same for you. Pass this along to all your woman friends and please be alert and be aware.
Oh my God. How much ether would you have to sniff to lose consciousness? Like how does an average person smell perfume?
You're like,
cover your entire face with something and breathe deeply for 90 seconds.
And how come the guys aren't passing out when they unleash ether to their faces? So this has
Where
never...
Where do you even get ether nowadays?
On the dark web.
On the internet, yeah.
As far as I know, this has not really been a thing that's happened. But it's been going around since 1999, this kind of email message. And my aunt was like, be careful, don't smell. I heard that it makes you pass out and faint. And I'm like, that's
not how that works. Bless your heart.
And this one is my last one. It's called The Mexican Pet. It's one of my favorites. This is from 86, but I know it's much older than that. A woman from La Mesa, California, went to Tijuana, Mexico to do some shopping. As any visitor to this border town knows, the streets near the shopping area are populated with stray dogs. The woman took pity on one little stray and offered it a few bites of her lunch, after which it followed her around for the rest of the afternoon. When it came time to return home, the woman had become so attached to her little friend she couldn't bear to leave it behind. Knowing that it was illegal to bring dogs across an international border, she hid it among some of her packages in the seat of her car and managed to pass it through the border checkpoint without incident. After arriving home, she gave the dog a bath, brushed his fur, and then retired for the night. With her new find, newfound pet curled up at the foot of her bed. When she woke the next morning, the woman noticed that there was an oozing mucus around the dog's eyes and foaming at the mouth. Afraid that the dog might be sick, she rushed into a nearby veterinarian and returned home to await word on her pet's condition. A call came soon. "I just have one question," said the vet. "Where did you get this dog?" The woman didn't want to get in trouble, so she told the vet that she had found the dog running loose in the street near her home. The vet didn't buy it. "You did not find this dog in La Mesa. Where did you get this dog?" The woman nervously admitted she brought the dog across the border from Tijuana. "But tell me, doctor, what's wrong with the dog?" His reply was brief and to the point. "First of all, it's not a dog. It's a Mexican sewer rat. And second, it's dying." Don't you hate getting your chihuahuas mixed up with Mexican sewer rats?
Oh, my God. So go see your optometrist because you need your eyes examined.
Yeah. My mom tried to tell me that my grandma did this, or her grandmother did that. My grandmother, she brought a dog, a creature back, and she thought it was, but I'm like, no, that didn't happen. She's like, no, but everyone says it, but she did. And I'm like, no, that's in a book. And then I was like, literally, it's right here.
Let me show you.
The Mexican pet. And she's like, oh, I'm like, you're stupid. And so is your story. Sorry. My mom's a terrible person. Anyway.
So you get to say stuff like that.
I can say that. And then there's the one, the scary stories to tell in the dark. There's the hook one, mm-hmm. which is basically the Lover's Lane story. And then the high beams one, which is the girl driving. But it's different from gang initiation. It's someone driving behind her. And every time the person in the backseat tries to get up to kind of, you know, attack her. He starts flashing his beam. So she's initially very afraid of the guy behind her chasing her, mm-hmm. thinking he's the assailant, but really he's just being protect her or whatever.
So it's like a fusion of the person hiding in your backseat and the high beam or headlight urban legends into one.
Yes. So those are fun. I mean, I have a bunch of books on the subject. I always like to find out where our stories came from. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, that's what's cool. Yeah. I think there's introductions in the Scary Stories book series where he saw, because the author didn't write these stories, like he collected them, mm-hmm. right? And I think it kind of talks very, very superficially, like not as in depth as your research has gone, but how these stories get passed down, reflect the culture that they originated in and what they had to do with society at the time and everything, like that it really is that oral history, oral mythology. And so that it's interesting, though, to use the term urban legend, you know, just by virtue of the fact that the term urban means city. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And so it's like none of these can happen in a rural location because it's an urban legend.
Harold didn't happen.
No, that was definitely a rural legend.
The Wendigo.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's fun. I mean, to any of our listeners who's never seen these very simple. I mean, they're kids' books, young adult, not even young adult. They're in elementary school. Mm-hmm. The Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, and they have very extensive notes and research in the back, mm-hmm. and we're excited.
All the citations, tons. Yeah. I use that every Halloween in school because, like, my big thing is that kids, you know, now they're like, oh, they need to be so stimulated. They, you know, they look at old movies. They're like, this looks so fake and everything just because of what they're used to visually with technology now. Mm-hmm. And so what I do is I do Harold and Give Me My Toe or Where Is My Toe? The Big Toe is the name of it.
I love that one.
And I just read it aloud, like campfire, but it's like, it's in my classroom. Obviously it's during the daytime, but I do close the blinds. I try to make it dark and I put up one of the illustrations up on the projector, but trying to give them an experience of what it would be like to have to rely on, to be paying attention, to be invested in the story, to really be, like focused and mm-hmm. primed to react to something that's spooky like that. Like we talk so much about whether or not you're scared by a movie depends on your buy-in and whether you're choosing to be scared. And so I kind of talked to them about that a little bit. And then, you know, try to read it in the scariest manner I can, like very Where's slowly and don't? Dramatic. And I put the book over my face. So then I'm like, and then that's one of the jump scare ones where at the end you're supposed to go, you've got it. Right. And so I always pick one student and like jump at them. And so you can tell which students really were investing in the story and listening and paying attention and allowing it to make them a little uneasy or make them on edge, because they'll jump, like they'll actually react. And then there are the kids that were like, what? I wasn't listening.
And you're like, damn it.
Now I'm going to start over.
Man, if my students were older, I'd love doing it. Fun. If I had like fifth graders or sixth, that'd be so fun. But for anyone who's not familiar with Stephen Gamble's drawings, like they tried to make it less scary.
It was like in the 2010s, mm-hmm. they re-released these books with new illustrations and there was like a riot.
And then they re-released them back.
Yeah, with the original ones, because like, people were so pissed.
You're stealing my childhood.
We won't stand for
and
it.
And I'm like, I agree.
Yeah, no, the illustrations are, they stick in your mind and that's all it takes. You know, because if you read the story and that just that one image in your mind, you're supposed to be able to let your imagination do the rest.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that, you know, reputedly to today's young people and future generations, quote unquote, can't do anymore because they haven't been forced to imagine things. They get everything, you know, actually spoon fed to them in terms of visuals and things like that. Yeah. You know, it's not like we used to sit around the radio and listen to the blah, blah, blah. And I think that...
I listened to Rin Tin Tin on the radio. Back in my day.
And I think that it's obviously true that technology has changed that, but sometimes I think it's unfair to say that, you know, kids, quote unquote, can't do this anymore. Or, you know, it's the same thing like, oh, kids can't entertain themselves. It's like, well, I think you'd be surprised they actually can if you force them to, you know, because like we do our end of the year picnic. We just take them to a spot in the park that has a playground and a field and that's it. And they can bring soccer balls or whatever, but that's all they have. Like we don't plan big games, you know, and they're there for like 4 or 5 hours and you would be amazed what they come up with. You know, you've got some kids that are like trying to dig the deepest hole there's ever been in the sandbox. And then there's some kids that have like created some sort of fairy circle off in the trees and they're trying to indoctrinate other people into their fairy club. And it's just like they can and they will if they get the opportunity to.
Yes. And I think that, well, I mean, a lot of it is parents who kind of feel like their kids aren't capable when they are.
Yeah.
So, and I've had that same conversation with even my little, the little babies and be like, they're perfectly capable. Yeah. And their parents are like, what, really? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm like, yeah. So yeah. I'll just read him a book and they'll listen and they'll be like, oh, you mm-hmm. know, sit there with their hand, you know, chins on their hands, listening all in. Yeah. Fine. You just have to say unplug for a little bit, even mm-hmm. if it's like for 30 minutes and just like, let's enjoy each other or let me scare the crap out of you, yeah. depending on how old they are. Yeah. But there's one story. I just dropped my book that I remember reading. I think I was in sixth grade and it was in our textbook and it was a Roald Dahl ghost story, or mm-hmm. it was not even a ghost story. And I can't remember. I want to say it's the landlady called mm-hmm. the landlady. Did you ever hear of that one?
No.
And it's, I have actually, I didn't have a copy of this until Victor's aunt gifted us. Basically it was for me, mm-hmm. but it was our Christmas gift.
Yeah.
It was like a skull with like, a Dia de los Muertos skull and a book by Roald Dahl of scary stories that okay. he wrote.
Yeah.
And this one, and it was in that book. And it was the landlady, and it was, the story goes like this. A young man comes to town. It was takes place in the 40s or something. Mm-hmm. So he goes to, on a train for business, and he goes to a town, and he's planning to go to this boarding house, like tavern kind of place. Uh-huh. But he's on his walk, and it's like kind of chilly or whatever, and he looks into this little bed and breakfast, and it looks really warm and inviting, and there's a dog curled up next to the hearth, and it looks really lovely, and it says vacancy. So he's like, well, why not, you know, go here? So he goes in there, and he signs the book, the guest book, and he feels like something's nagging at him. Like, it seems familiar. Mm-hmm. And she's a nice old woman, and she offers him some tea. He's like, yeah, sure, thank you. And he keeps like thinking about how much it smells like almonds mm-hmm. to him. And then he she's like, oh, you know, these are actually stuffed. My bird here and my dog. And
oh, like taxidermied. Stuffed, yeah.
Taxidermied. And he's like, well, where are your other guests? And she's like, well, they're upstairs. And so it's very like a Norman Bates kind of mm-hmm. situation.
Yeah.
But it was really good. And I remember reading it and being like, it was in the afternoon. It was like 2:30 in the afternoon in middle school. And I was reading it and being like, so nervous and scared. And it got me. It was fun. I want to say it was around Halloween time. And he just was like, turn to page something. And didn't even give us any kind of information. Was it front loading? He didn't front load any information, but it was scared the crap out of us. So.
Yeah. That's cool. I should try and see if she still has it and I could bring it in, because Grace got, when she was in eighth grade, her literature teacher, who is amazing, gave them all an assignment where it was like they had, you know, the story sounded a little bit like that. Mm-hmm. Like the premise a little bit like that. And so they read the story and then she gave them the assignment where they had to write a new ending. And I remember Grace bringing me hers and it was goddamn terrifying. Like, it was so scary when I read her and I was like, did you turn this in already? What did Miss Kanzig think? Oh my God.
You're like, ugh.
But yeah, so I'll have to see, if I still have a copy somewhere, because I definitely, if she had given it to me, I would have kept it. It was epic.
Was it written by, who wrote it, the first part?
I don't know. I'll have to check. I'll look into it and report back on our next recording.
Okay, great. Well, this is a long, long conversation, but fun. And also kind of let me nerd out a little bit on a bunch of information that I have in my brain that's not really helpful except for today.
Well, but when you think about it, like your interest in horror movies, connecting to your interest in crime, connecting to your interest in myths and urban legends, it all makes sense, because like there are so many scary movies where even if they're not a direct depiction of an urban legend, that it's inspired by it.
Yeah.
You know, and some of them are direct.
Candyman,
like, yeah.
Bloody Mary.
And so.
La Llorona.
La Llorona. Yeah. And so, like, some of them are direct and some of them are just influenced. But obviously, like, if you're interested in scary movies, like, this is probably going to be pretty interesting to you, too.
Yeah, it's fun. And always, you know, it's impossible to know all of them because there are just so many and they're ever evolving and there are new ones all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's always like a fun little, you know, read if you get bored on the internet, or there's like even videos about different things that are pretty fun and like where they originated and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of the Native American stories like that are passed on are really, really cool to know more and like why they're afraid of these different things. It's fun.
But. Yeah.
So, speaking of weird creatures.
Oh, good segue.
Our next movie is Jeepers Creepers that was released in 2001. And it's our final movie of this shorter kind of
summer theme. Well, and actually the only one in the 2000s, right? Oh, no. Final Destination was 2000.
Okay. Yeah. But this like
2001.
Dips lightly into the 2000s.
Yeah.
Because it's 2001. And the year I graduated college, so.
What?
Not college, high school. That's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.